Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at A Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned Unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manny C. Mort. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which will cover House of the Dragon Season 3, Episode 3, titled Rhaenyra Triumphant. There really should have been a question mark after
Yeah, I agree.
that.
Facetious sarcasm. I don't
It's,
know. It didn't
who
feel very
knows?
triumphant, just saying. We'll get into that
Nope.
in a bit. But as a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, and of course, all past episodes of House of the Dragon, possibly Game of Thrones, and possibly Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Who knows? But less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood. Only things that have happened, like up to and including the episodes that have aired. And of course, Fire and Blood is the source material for House of the Dragon. It is very raw, small amount of source material. I'm already seeing a lot of changes that it's hard to even encompass what I'm seeing change-wise in these discussions without spoiling anything. But I do like to add some tidbits from stuff we're kind of already seeing on screen. So keep that in mind. We're going to start with a summary of Rhaenyra Triumphant, then cover what we think are the main hot takes from this episode, and conclude with a favorites roundup from this week's new installment.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Do not forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including access to these Hot D Takes live streams for $5 and up a month, patrons, and early access to the video recordings of these episodes and the podcast versions of these episodes for just $3 a month. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Yeah, seriously, guys, you guys should consider being part of the Patreon because we love interaction. We want interaction in our chat. That always makes things better. So please join us on the journey. You know, we need more people to banter with. And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary. While Game of Thrones had cold openings for seven of its eight season premieres, Rhaenyra Triumphant actually features House of the Dragon's first cold opening ever, with many dragons posturing and seemingly willing Kneeler in Ormund Hightower, who also seemingly gives up his ward, Viserys and Alicent's youngest son, Daeron, easily as well. Yes. Seemingly. More on that later. For now, it's off to the Red Keep, where our queen has unfortunately inherited more than a few messes along with the throne. Sure, Daeron is her captive, but he isn't speaking a word, and Rhaenyra moves from that odd first-ever encounter with her youngest half-brother to what seems to be an impromptu meeting about how all of the crown's gold has just poof up and disappeared while Aegon held the throne. Rhaenyra refuses to believe that the only people who knew or might have known where the gold is are all dead, leading her to Alicent's chamber to demand information on both that and Aegon's whereabouts. But Alicent apparently has no clue on either account, though her idea to claim Aegon is dead and that the scarred and burnt person Larys might try to raise up can simply be dismissed as an imposter isn't exactly the worst idea that Alicent has ever had. Unfortunately, for the first time, Rhaenyra really tries to use this tale, "Oh, a dead baby gone," the high septum she parrots it to, refuses to believe it because no one has seen a body. Clearly, he's been listening to me on this podcast, and without a body, the High Septum certainly can't anoint Rhaenyra as queen because, of course, he can't. I mean, if we know anything about this universe, it's that the High Septums do always be causing trouble.
And in an episode that is clearly meant to set viewers on edge, the hits just keep coming because not only do we get another awkward dinner scene with Rhaenyra, Corlys, and the sons he wants to legitimize, but the very next day, Rhaenyra gets her period right as she's preparing to sit the throne and hear petitioners for the first time, making an already uncomfortable situation, well, extra uncomfortable to say the least. And when Rhaenyra deigns to ask Alicent for input after this troublesome hearing of petitions, well, Rhaenyra doesn't like being told that she's going to have to do things she never would have done before she sat the throne. That said, Rhaenyra does not seem to recoil from throwing a joke of a banquet for some of the highborn who hoarded food during the blockade. Not only japing about them backing the high towers in the first place, but then feeding them roasted body of rat for dinner, while the gold cloaks use their absence to raid their storerooms to feed the small folk who have been starving. Queen of the people, am I right?
Amen.
But no sooner has Rhaenyra had this small moment of triumph than she is confronted by Corlys, who is pretty PO'd that she dubbed Adam of Hull and not Adam Valerian when knighting him. Rhaenyra tries to explain how she can't be raising bastards to noble names and titles while people are still questioning her own son's legitimacy, but Corlys is having none of these excuses, and so Rhaenyra adds yet another thing to a lengthening list of shit that might, nay, probably will, come back to bite her in the ass. Meanwhile, Daemon has been blustering about world domination and also repeatedly insisting that Rhaenyra has to kill Daeron, a choice Rhaenyra can't bring herself to make, instead deciding to show mercy and send him to the wall to join the Night's Watch. Heck, she'll even let him see his mother for the first time in many, many years. Except, oopsie, Allison arrives to greet her son, and that's decidedly not who this boy is, because Ormond is playing some other sort of game. He dressed up a merchant's son as the little prince, and no sooner has Rhaenyra uncovered this deception than a dragon keeper arrives to reveal that Ormond did not in fact march back to Old Town, but has instead taken Tumbleton and is holding its people hostage. What does Ormond hope to accomplish indeed? And while we're pondering about that, let's take a look at Maester Manny's predictions from last week.
So, hope you guys didn't bet money on this one.
So the first one was that there would be, the only really legitimate one, let's be real, was that there would be some weirdness because Alicent needs to answer for what she did, but Rhaenyra won't want to like make Alicent answer for that. And the people might want her to also answer, like might want Alicent and or the Hightowers to also answer for these things. And will this maybe put Rhaenyra's reign at risk? I don't want to say this is entirely wrong. Alicent is answering in a tiny bit of a way for what she did by being held prisoner when she expected to be able to escape. You know, her and Helaena are still kind of like, you said we could go, you said we could leave. And Rhaenyra's like, well, none of this pleases me, but nope. So it's not as like dire necessarily as you were thinking. But I think that was less of a prediction that would happen necessarily just this, like, this is exactly what will happen in episode 3, but things that are kind of going to snowball and happen maybe throughout the season. So I do think that you weren't incorrect, and this is kind of a start to that situation. Now, the second one... Honestly, Aemon will be at Harrenhal forever and we'll never see him again. Mostly because Manny doesn't ever want to see Harrenhal again.
I never want to see Harrenhal again. Yes.
This is what we talked about.
Yes.
Listen, we know that Aemon has to be, if not in Harrenhal, then somewhere very nearby, because he was in dire straits with that injury last weekend.
You know, maybe that should be my prediction for like next time. I think that, what's her name? The one who wants Harrenhal.
Alicent Rivers.
No, yes.
Alicent Rivers
is probably going to nurse Aemon back to health, because she'll probably be like, oh, well, he can take this thing and then I can be here.
I think that we have to believe that if Aemon isn't in Harrenhal proper, he certainly has not gone far because of that injury. And it is kind of funny that you said we'll never see him again, even though you were joking, because the whole discussion in this episode was that he's disappeared. So like a true psychic, Manny, I think that your prophecies, your predictions are 10% right.
Dude,
based on like obvious facts. I don't know.
Dude, if you throw enough things at a wall, something's bound to stick, you know?
And that's what I'm saying. You threw a whole litany of things that would possibly happen with Aemon and Harrenhal, and talk about Aemon having disappeared in this, so
this would be the funniest prediction I ever had if we don't see him for the rest of the season. Be like, okay, oh my God. Well, I was right.
I mean, it's not forever, but the forever is it's a construct. Mm-hmm. It'll be 2 years we get a new season, so there is that.
Hot take number one, he or she who kills the prince gets the castle, aka Rhaenyra announces a reward that may or may not stick, but either way, for now, she's claiming that if someone slays Aemon, they can have Harrenhal. Ugh, okay, hear me out just real quick. This is Rhaenyra, right? This is our queen. I love her with all my heart. I would follow her to the depths of hell.
Okay? She apparently agrees with you that Harrenhal is worthless anyway. She has all the rest of the Riverlands. What does she need with Harrenhal?
Yeah, like, but why offer that as a reward? Couldn't you just give me like a little trash can to live in or something, like, you know, in Highgarden or someplace decent? You can go plant the trees at Highgarden. Okay, great. It's like that or Harrenhal. Dude, just send me to the north and then send me to the wall. Like, that'd be much better. At least there's more like colorful characters there. You can take Harrenhal. I don't know, man. I just thought that reward was, we can clearly see she's a little panicky at this point. You know, there's a lot to deal with and stuff. And she's just like, oh yeah, Harrenhal. Yeah, fuck it. Yeah, take it. Just whatever. Whoever kills Aemon can fucking have Harrenhal. Just fucking tear it down. Build an amusement park. Mm-hmm. We'll have the dragons fly out there at night. You know, they can do fireworks and shit. And we got a big fucking Westeros Mickey Mouse running around for all the kids and shit. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. You know,
it'd be more like, what's it called? Netherworld,
exactly.
For those of you who know nothing about Georgia or the Atlanta area, or very well known haunted, like, not even houses, it's kind of like a little haunted theme park thing. Netherworld is a very big haunted.
Yeah, it's super big. It's pretty cool. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, this is kind of a hilarious take on what to do with Harrenhal. I don't think that this pronouncement is going to hold up in the end, because Harrenhal, as much as probably you quite a bit more than me like to rag on it, Harrenhal is a very important seat. It is, even in its current state, the biggest and most important castle in the Riverlands. It holds some vast lands and what could be vast wealth for whoever has it as their seat. They won't be the Lord Paramount of the Riverlands or whatever, but they'll still be holding one of the richest and like most vast properties in Westeros. So that's why I don't really think this is going to hold up in the end, because it could literally be a peasant who... I don't think it would be, but it could be, yeah, technically a peasant who just finds Aemon on the road and kills him. But yeah, I think it might be fun to watch people run around trying to find and kill Aemon, because as we know, everyone wants Harrenhal for some godforsaken reason. And honestly, let's not forget that Alys Rivers was the last person to see Aemon alive at this point, and she does really want Harrenhal. That could be an interesting twist.
Are you familiar with that meme with the lady who's like, "You are now my elite employees"?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yes, that's what I thought about when I was like, that's the speech that whoever wins Harrenhal is going to get. I understand that Harrenhal is a castle in the same sense that Chipotle is food, okay? Both are true and untrue at the same time. Look, and nothing against the people who had it, because I liked them. I thought they were cool. And I love Alicent Rivers. You know, she's great too. Like, I really like her. But bro, I don't know, man. You can write it off. Like, look, everyone tells me how great Chipotle is, but it's not. It's really garbage.
Dean and I were literally just talking shit about Chipotle yesterday. Like, literally last night, we were looking for somewhere to go have dinner, like, very close to home, because it was storming. Neither of us felt like cooking or anything. And there's a Chipotle, like, right around the corner, along with Wendy's, Arby's, and some other, like, some actual restaurants, too. He was like, I don't understand why people like Chipotle. And I was like, I've had it twice in my entire life, and I'm pretty sure the last time I had it was, like, 10 or 11 years ago.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's how I feel about Harrenhal and Chipotle. Is it food or is it not food? Well, technically both is true. Harrenhal is, it's a castle, sure.
Like, Chipotle is a Mexican restaurant. Harrenhal
Chipotle
is
a Mexican. Exactly. It's like, it's like, I mean, yeah, sure. I guess technically it is. Technically, Chipotle has a license to serve food, but is it food? I don't know.
Hot take number two. Insert timely brick and minifig / Mormon connection here. Because the Faith is almost certainly invested in the High Towers, what with the Starry Sept being in their seat of Old Town, wink, wink. Like we said in the summary, we're just going back to fucking High Septons always causing trouble. Like, okay, fine, High Septon, no one has seen Aegon's body and all that, but wow, this dude is ballsy, just straight up refusing to anoint Rhaenyra at all, and also pretty much going off on her being all anti-dragon.
Yeah.
Honestly, in a way, you kind of have to tip your hat to this dude for having the balls to look Rhaenyra in the eye and tell her that dragons are created in darkness and pride and lust, for power, for impunity, that they destroy but do not create, and no good can come of them, blah, blah, blah. Because, like, the Targaryens think of themselves as dragons in a way too. I mean, some of them do think of themselves as dragons in like the literal sense. I don't think Rhaenyra is quite on that level. She was raised by our king Viserys, who believed that dragons are dangerous, etc. But the High Septon knows that Targaryens think of themselves as dragons in a way as well. So while he's talking about the literal dragons, the undertones, at least in my opinion, were of him also talking about the Targaryen family.
Yes, I got that vibe too when they said that. But you know what? You know what's a really good thing here? It made me think of two scenes. Number one, from the original Game of Thrones, Margaery. I love Margaery. And I love the actress, you know, super. And then when she got killed, it pissed me off, right? And like with Cersei, Cersei is a very strange character for me because I both love and hate her at the same time. I get what she does and how she gets there. But that scene, man, when she's just sipping on the wine and all that green oil is everywhere and burning everything down, I was like, look, I'm not one to just kill innocent people. But in that situation, I'm like, bro, they humiliated your ass. Like, yeah, girl, get yours. So
also
just
the music in that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking perfect.
But seeing these people being assholes, it didn't bother me because I was like, yeah. Yeah, let's give it another 150 years. Watch what happens to y'all. I can't wait.
Watch what happens to your entire sept.
Gone.
Just to touch on I made the funny like Bricks and Minifigs Mormon connection. Like, just to be clear, the faith is absolutely invested in the High Towers because the High Towers, like I said, their seat is in Old Town. They are the family of Old Town, and the Starry Sept, which is the main, it's like the Vatican, right? This is the Vatican for the Faith of the Seven, is in Old Town. So when I was writing up these hot takes, I was like, I want to include this because I want to talk shit about how High Septons are like always just fucking around. And in this case, maybe not finding out, but eventually they will see Game of Thrones.
They do eventually.
Season 7, was it? But I wanted to put that Bricks and Minifigs like Mormon connection here because it's like the High Septon, you guys, is the Mormon church.
Yep.
And Bricks and Minifigs is the High Tower. And also, if you do not know what we're talking about, you can listen to our June State of the Saga podcast episode.
Yes.
We talk about that quite a bit. Or you can literally just Google Bricks and Minifigs drama and find like 1,800 other videos about it. So
it's
enjoy
a fascinating
that reference.
Story. Yeah. A fascinating story with the Bricks and Minifigs. Like,
enjoy that very current reference.
Yeah. Hot take number three, matters of bastards and heirs and legitimacy, oh my. Or Rhaenyra won't give Corlys what he wants in regards to legitimizing his bastard sons, and he goes ham on her about it. This was one of those times with Rhaenyra where I'm like, baby girl, what you doing? Come on, dude. Even her reasoning, like, I guess I half understand it, but I'm like, dude, this is not the time for that because you're a different queen. You're a different leader. And here you go. Okay. Yep. And like, here we go again. A Westerosi leader being Westerosi, you know, like, all right, I guess you're just going to fall right into the same bullshit. And especially for someone coming from like her dynamic, right? That they didn't want her as queen because she's a woman and all this stuff. It's like, dude, why don't you let the guy, like, I don't know. I don't understand. I didn't understand this. This would have been one of those situations that I wouldn't have agreed with her on.
Like you said, I see where she's coming from to an extent, but girl, you've already put bastards, including one of these guys, on dragons because they had Targaryen blood and they were able to, you know, tame. I'm putting that in quotes because dragons are never really tame, but they were able to, let's say, like, bond with these dragons. And Adam, one of Corlys's bastard sons, is one of those people. And I understand what she's saying about like the question of her son's legitimacy and everything. But man, Corlys has been there with her since day one. I mean, he even says it before he goes ham on her. He's like, dude, I backed you. Like, I named one of your sons my heir after her first husband. His son died. Him being upset about this is completely reasonable. But wow, maybe he shouldn't have started yelling about her sons being bastards in public.
That is true. Because we all know what happened the last time somebody did that. And I kind of waited the entire time. I was like, where's Daemon with his sword in the background? And we're just gonna see this guy's tongue, you know, all of a sudden with the top part of his head cut off.
Yeah, but it's Corlys, so no. But
it's Corlys, but still, if I was gonna say that, I'd have been like this first. I'd have been like, anyways, your kids are bastards.
I think Corlys is just at this point in his life where he don't give a fuck about anything. And honestly, I respect that.
But also, in Rhaenyra's defense, also that she did not make, Corlys fucking treated him like a bastard the entire fucking time, okay? And then all of a sudden wants to give him his fucking name. The guy's not innocent either, okay? Yeah. The guy tried to wipe these kids like just, oh no, well, they're just bastard kids and whatever. And now you want to give them their name because they helped you out in battle and all this kind of stuff. And then Rhaenyra's like, no, fuck that shit. You thought they were bastards? They're bastards.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if he'd done this during Viserys's rule.
Yeah, I think that Viserys would have accepted it and been like, yes, they're absolutely like your kids. But again, like, I don't want to like put all the blame on Rhaenyra on this either, even though that's not really the angle. You know, Corlys, like, he was your bastard kid like 2 days ago. And now it's like, oh, you need to treat him like one of mine. It's like, bro, you were the deadbeat first before Rhaenyra was. Let's just keep that in mind here. I love Corlys, but
you're not wrong about the timing either. And also, you know, Adam has been a dragon rider for a bit. And it really seems like even with Adam being a dragon rider, I don't think Corlys would have legitimized or even thought too much about legitimizing Adam had Alan not had his back so much in the Battle of the Gullet.
Yep.
Which is also, Corlys, come on, dude. I don't know. I don't want to hate on Corlys. I don't want to hate. I think they're
both, love them. Like,
they're both wrong in this situation for varied reasons. Also, side note, how many awkward dinners have happened in this series so far? That's a rhetorical question. But there's been a lot of awkward dinners in House of the Dragon. And this one where Corlys first asks Rhaenyra about legitimizing these sons is just another in a like a litany of awkward dinners. At least the fourth.
I mean, this episode is really the stakeholder of House of Awkward Dinners, you know, like this is what it is. Like, you know, it was like,
oh God, we'll get into that in a minute. Yeah. Well, rather than jump ahead too much, let's go to hot take number four. Rhaenyra gets her period because of course she does.
Of course she does.
I don't know how much I really want to talk about this. I read some articles, read some Reddit posts, but I also like, I have my own opinion on it. Mm. I honestly don't know that this was really, that it was really necessary for her to get her period right and about to sit and hear those petitions. It seemed that they wanted it to be a reason for why she seems extra uncomfortable during the petitions scene. Mm. And as somebody who has suffered from extremely long and painful periods most of my life, not like to be TMI, but honestly, like, I get it. But also, did they really need her to be that much extra uncomfortable during that scene? Because aren't the chair and hearing these petitions that she mostly can't do anything about right now uncomfortable enough on their own? And I get them maybe trying to drive home the reality of ruling as a woman or whatever. And I did double check, and this episode was written and directed by women, so like, okay, because if it had been written and or directed by men, I honestly would be probably 500% more angry about this. And I'm not really angry about it, I'm just unsure. I'm really torn about this choice because, again, I don't think it was totally necessary. Sorry, not sorry. I just think that she could be uncomfortable and irritated enough, especially with everything that she was dealing with the whole first part of the episode, right? Even before she had to sit on that shitty ass chair, diseased ass chair, hearing these like petitioners, you know, come at her with things she can't really help her now because there's no fucking money, which we already knew about from earlier in the episode. I don't know, like she could be uncomfortable and irritated enough without also having her period, including that she did felt a bit ham-handed. Like, okay, again, some of the opinions I saw was like, oh, they're trying to drive home the reality of ruling as a woman, but it's like, aren't we trying to stop that? Because isn't the whole thing about men being like anti-women being in positions of power? Like, oh, they'll get their period and they'll just be like, nah, we can't handle it. Fuck you. You know how much shit I've handled when I've been like literally practically doubled over with cramps, bleeding your tampons every 3 fucking hours, and I've been I deal with work trauma. I don't like lose my temper at all. Like, fuck that. I don't know. Actually, the more I talk about it, the more annoyed I'm getting. So like, I guess my opinion is it was unnecessary and I hated it.
I think it was unnecessary. I think it fed into that stereotype of like, oh, well, you know, she's got her periods. So, you know, she's not going to be able to like rule right. Or maybe she's going to be upset about something. And I just assumed from that scene alone that it was written and directed by men. So the fact that it was directed by women kind of actually surprises me. I think it was okay to have that if they would have done something more with that. But they really didn't. It was just like, oh shit, I'm bleeding. I thought that honestly, it could have just ended right there. Because it's like, yeah, those are things that honestly, just in my shit, like that's shit I didn't think about. Oh yeah, well, of course. I mean, Rhaenyra is a woman. I don't even see her as a woman. I see her as a godlike being who just roams the earth. So do they have their period? But yeah, it was a bit hammy, and I don't fully understand the purpose of it being there.
As a femme person, when I first saw it, I immediately was like, I hate this. And then I read something, saw that it was written and the episode was written and directed by women. I felt a little bit better about it. But now that, like I said, now that I'm talking about it, now I'm mad about it again. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Anyway, let's move on.
Hot take number 5, let them eat rats. Or Rhaenyra feeds some not so loyal nobles the delicacies that Smallpoke have been dining on.
I love this scene.
Yes. This is just classic good writing right here. And I was sitting there and I was watching it with Jen, and I saw all the people coming up to serve them things. And I said, okay, because I didn't know that Jen had actually watched Game of Thrones, like the original one. So she's like, oh, maybe this is what's going to happen, like that wedding that happened or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I kind of look. And as the people are walking in, I'm like, look at that. There's one person for each of these people sitting down. So something's going to happen. You know, they're just going to start slitting throats, right? But again, to the writers and the great fucking writing, that's what I thought was going to happen. But instead, something more impactful happened where it wasn't just, oh, okay, it's just going to be a massacre. It wasn't. It was just, oh, here are your rats. Here's your Chipotle. Enjoy it. And we're going to steal all your gold. That was great sense of justice.
Well, like, they're not stealing gold. They're stealing food, just to be clear. Actually, no, let's rephrase. They're not stealing anything. They're repurposing food, not gold. Yep. They probably could and should also take gold. I did look it up because I did reread the portions of Fire and Blood that deal, like each week I read a little more because I'm like not sure what they're going to cover in this season. But I also double checked, like I looked it up on wikis and stuff. This is something that was created for the show. So you're right giving props to the writers. And I was fairly certain. And it was because like I even before the reread I that's something that would have stuck out in my mind, right? Like there's a lot of shit talking about the shit Daemon does and stuff in Fire and Blood, but not so much that Rhaenyra does stuff. This is a Daemon thing, honestly. And the funny part about it was that I think it's Masarius is like, what would your father do? And Rhaenyra says, throw a banquet. And I'm like, I don't know that Viserys would have fed his guests rats, but I still love it. I loved her attitude in this whole scene, like making jokes about their loyalty or lack of it. Like you said, that she tricked them into being away from their homes by giving them this like banquet, so to say, so that she could take back the food that they'd hoarded, plus taking that Red Keep rat population that was a constant theme in this episode down a few ticks by killing and cooking them for this little party. Like two rats, or many rats, but two rats with one stone, if you will.
You know what this scene reminded me of, if you watch The Boys, is when Homelander makes the Deep eat Timothy, right?
Oh my God.
It's like, eat fucking Timothy, right? Like, that's what this reminded me of, where it's like, oh, you support me? You love me as your queen? Eat the fucking rat.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't want to say I was disappointed that she didn't make them eat the rats, because I feel like that would have been, that's a little bit too much. She's being gracious by just like, quote unquote, serving them the rat dish. And it might have been like maggots on the plates too. It looked like it was rice. And then like I watched the after the show and I think it might have been maggots, but I was like, I'm not going back and zooming in on this.
Well, I think
I don't want to know.
Yeah, well, I think this scene is what really just makes her a great leader, because it's not about making them eat the rats. It's about sending a fucking message where she's like, I could make you eat those fucking rats, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to take your food. Do you have something to say about that? Because if we're taking your food, I'm sorry that you don't have enough food, because there is enough here on a plate in front of you right now, and you can certainly eat that. That's that coy fucking shit that honestly, it doesn't surprise me that this was something that was written for the show, because this is a classic example of their writing, how they do things kind of so subtly. You know, these writers do shit that sometimes that's just so fucking subtle and so perfect. So it doesn't surprise me that this was something that was specifically written for the show.
Hot take number 6. What are we going to do tonight, Daemon? The thing we should have been doing all along, Rhaenyra. Try to take over the world. I don't mean to say Rhaenyra is Pinky and Pinky and the Brain. I don't at all. She's not. But I saw that scene and that was all I could think of, speaking in the Brain for some reason. Yes, but anyway, absolutely. In which, Daemon's political platform is colonialism.
Yep.
Some of this isn't super shocking. We always knew that he pretty much believes that the Targaryens are gods and whatever, but now he's just straight up stating, like, we have 6 dragons now. Let's take over the world. But also Rhaenyra is like, yeah, hey, remember the doom? Like the doom of Valyria? Like when the people who had dragons got like a little too spicy about shit and then there was the doom and it destroyed like a whole section of our world. Like, yeesh, Daemon, calm your tits.
Yeah.
The timing of this conversation, Daemon, read the room. She just took the throne. King's Landing and really all of Westeros are a fucking mess. Most of Westeros, certainly the Crownlands, the Riverlands. It's really not the time to push for world domination.
So what this made me think of was World War II. When they decimated Nazi Germany, they were like, all right, guys, we're done. Time to go home. And General Patton was like, no, let's go fight the Russians. And they're like, well, they're our allies. And he's like, we're going to have to fight them later anyway. We're already here. Why don't we just take them out now? And that's what this made me think of, to where he's like, look, we took the fucking throne. There's all these other places. And let's face facts. You are going to have to fight them later at some point if they don't bend the fucking knee. So why don't we just fucking take them out now? We got the dragons now while they're still alive. You know, let's fucking get them.
He might have a point somewhat about like Dorne, because that's part of Westeros. Mm-hmm. But like, he's talking about all of Essos. Like, he's talking about Yeti. That's fucking far the fuck away. He's talking about a land where men have wings, okay? That, like, he doesn't even know what it's called, or if he does, he doesn't say. This mythical land where men have wings. And I think he is trying to push for Rhaenyra's sense of adventure, because he, I mean, listen, we know Daemon. He can't sit still for very long. He is our ADHD, yes, narcissistic boy. Again, not the time. Like, listen, clean up your own kitchen before you bitch about somebody else's, okay?
Yeah, no, but he's one of those ADHD people like me where you make a list of things to do and then all of a sudden you go into the closet and you're like, hey, this closet needs to be reorganized, which doesn't need to be reorganized and doesn't anything. So you're focusing on this one thing that is not on your list that doesn't need to get done, instead of doing the things that actually need to get done.
Yeah, yeah.
So Daemon is just our, he's just our ADHD king. And he just wants to just rule the world. So
I also imagine him as a Sagittarius, just saying. As a Sagittarius myself, like, listen, I do get the need for constant just being on the move. Just saying. I'm not a huge proponent necessarily of astrology, but that's one thing about being a Sagittarius that I have latched onto, because it is a huge part of my personality. Like, you see how much I travel and how much I've moved. My God, you've known me for what, like a 10 years or so, and I've moved how many times just in the 10 years you've
known? Yeah, that's true. I was born under a bad sign. So I'm a Gemini, so everyone hates us.
Oh, you know? No, so. You're Elle Woods. Gemini is a vegetarian. I mean, you're not a vegetarian. But.
No. I like meat. However, the other side of me does not like meat. So yes, I am, but yet not a vegetarian. That's the beauty about us. We can do both. Hot take number 7. Just because you name him Daeron does not mean he belonged to the Targaryens. Whose white baby is that?
You understand why I had to give this one to you?
That was the first thing I sent you right after I watched the fucking episode. I was like, dude, did you see this? Because that's what I thought about. I was like,
oh, goddamn. Last night.
Whose goddamn white baby?
Just to be clear, because like, there's already been a video made about this, and props to whoever else. It came up on my Facebook girls, and I immediately sent it to you because I was like, oh, they thought it too. You aren't the only one. I'd never even seen the movie you were talking about. So 10:30 p.m. on Sunday night, July 5th, Manny, as soon as he was watching this episode, sent me the clip from this movie. So
yeah, dude, I saw it and I was like, and I saw Alice's face, and the first thing I thought of was fucking Cat Williams in that movie. Whose goddamn white baby is this? That one might be mine, but that one.
Oh my God.
Oh man. AKA Ormond's Daeron deception is revealed. Pretty ballsy of Ormond to take a merchant's son, threaten him in silence, dye his hair, and dress him up and send him to King's Landing as Daeron. Look, that was pretty ballsy. But again, I want to say I was surprised about it, but I was not, because of how quickly he gave up that kid. He didn't even make an argument for it. He was like, oh, you know what? Yeah, you want white kid? Here you go. White blonde kid. Here you go. Come on, let's go, you Targaryen. agrarian person. There you go. He gave it up a little too easy. So, you
also,
know,
his
at the time,
was too smug about it.
Yeah, he was way too smug about it. Yeah. So I'm honestly not surprised, but it was cool the way they did it, because look, the actress who does Allison, I can't remember what her name is, but she has in the entire show the absolute best facial expressions. She has the best look on her face at all times. Surprised, shocked, sad, mad. She's just really good at emoting with her face, man.
It's Olivia Cook, by the way. Just
Olivia Cook. Okay, yeah. Olivia Cook is fantastic when it comes to that, dude. So the look on her face, I was like, oh, I already know. That is not your white baby. She emotes so good with that. So that scene and that reveal was just so good. I was like, oh, nice. That was like my reaction to it. I was like, fucking nice. Okay.
I will say, like, side note, someone send me the name of the stylist Ormond used to get that basically perfect Targ blonde on that kit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man.
I say that jokingly because I actually had like very nice looking platinum blonde hair for a long time because I had a great stylist. But as I've aged, it just got to the point where like I couldn't keep up with that. I was never bleaching my hair ever. I just had a very good stylist who used the right dye and the right toner, and I used the right shampoo, et cetera, et cetera. But honestly, like, really, I was like, send me the name of the stylist. Let's go back platinum again. White blonde Tara circa, I think the last time I was white blonde was like 2020. So, but like also to note, the Hightowers are at this point one, if not the strongest and richest houses outside of the Targaryens. And as we saw in the cold opening, Ormond has a pretty fucking big army. So that and his smug face and how quickly he just was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll bend the knee. It just, none of it sounded legit either. Yeah. It all sounded just kind of smarmy. And him giving up Darren is like, oh, you want him? Okay.
It was a little too quick, you know, like, hey, you gave that up pretty damn quickly. And yes, the fact that he had such a big army and really could have put up a fight at that point. Okay. But I didn't think about it at the time until afterwards. It all made sense afterwards.
I was at first in the realm of like, oh shit, is this one of those major changes that George R. R. Martin was complaining about? Because that's the thing. Every time they make a major change from what happened in Fire and Blood, I'm like, well, maybe this is just one of the things Martin didn't like. But then as soon as the kid wouldn't even talk to Rhaenyra, I was like, nah, there's something up here. And I just kept thinking back to Ormond's like smarmy, like little self-satisfied face. And I was like, nah, there's something up here. Either it's not Darren or it is Darren, but they've got some sort of plan somehow where he's gonna like go up to the parapets and call Tessarion in and fuck some shit up. I don't know, but I knew pretty much as soon as the kid wouldn't talk that this can't be something. Well, maybe it is still something Martin is pissed about, but not in the way I thought originally that it was actually maybe Darren. Also, at the very end of the episode, Rhaenyra finds out that Ormond also didn't march home to Old Town, shocker, but he's taken Tumbleton, which is very close to, and of course she can't go like burn him and his army because in doing so she'd kill the many, many innocents who call this place home. And I also just think it's important that the show made it a point earlier in the episode for the dragon seed, Hugh the Hammer, to approach Rhaenyra and tell her that his wife had fled to Tumbleton. I think that's something that they want us to remember. And that's why they included him approaching her that way halfway through the episode-ish. And then at the very end, we find out that Ormond has taken Tumbleton. So all I'm going to say about that, I do also want to point out that if I'm remembering things correctly, I think the show is seriously fiddling with some timelines here in terms of battles. I'm pretty sure that if I'm right about this, it might be to keep certain characters on screen longer than they would have been on screen otherwise. I suppose only time will tell. And again, that's all I'm going to say about that. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's this part of me that's like, what the fuck is happening here? How is Ormond in Tumbleton right now? Right now of all times. I don't know. But I have a feeling it's to keep certain characters on screen longer. Yeah. That's sad because otherwise I'm gonna like, I might slip and say something I shouldn't say. I think it's time for our favorites roundup. So we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I know we hate on Harrenhal a lot, but I really felt like they were giving the Red Keep the Harrenhal treatment in this episode. It made me so anxious. And it wasn't, yes, it was the things that Rhaenyra was having to deal with and everything, but it was like the darkness of a lot of the scenes. A lot of Rhaenyra moving around at night, you know, her kind of wandering the halls and eventually going to get in bed with Daemon, her visiting Darren while he's sleeping and like kind of standing over him while he's sleeping, like picking up his toy and eyeballing it. There was something, things about this episode that was like, they're giving the Red Keep the Harrenhal treatment right now.
Yeah. The lots of mentions in combat to Viserys and his rule. If only we can see him again, our king. I love him so much and I miss him so much. And honestly, it made me want to go back and like, yeah, I think I want to rewatch like season one and all this stuff. And also, did you notice how many times Rhaenyra put her hand on that throne and they focused on her hand on that throne?
Jesus Christ,
I'm
yes.
Like, I'm like, girl, you're going to get the tetanus, you know, like you better watch out, dude. It just takes one swipe and then you got the next 30 years of agony. But no, it was really cool that they kept bringing back into like his rule. When they do that and they bring that stuff up, it just reminds me of how he saw himself as a failure. But I see him as like a great king because he kept the peace. He was able to keep everybody kind of calm and everything worked out just fine. Because I know that because he didn't have any battles or any wars or, you know, oh, you were like a terrible like leader. But it's like, no, he was actually a great fucking leader because there was no conflict and there was nothing going on.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, like, there was conflict, but it was, like, deep-seated, and he was playing the conciliator, but not in the way, like, the actual Jaehaerys, pre-Viserys was Jaehaerys. It wasn't quite to that extent because he gave a lot of leeway to a lot of people that he shouldn't have is kind of like the point. And that's why people are like, he wasn't a great ruler or whatever. But I don't know. Listen, like you said, we fucking love him. I do want to say this is jumping ahead a little bit in my favorite stuff, but because there's a point I want to make about Viserys and I do think Alicent was great in this episode. You've already mentioned Olivia Cooke and her facial expressions and how great she is. Just a look reveals
fantastic.
So much.
Fantastic.
But she also made some great points, gave some pretty good advice, at least as it can apply to their current situation.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, as much as we love Viserys, our king, when Rhaenyra sort of reminded Alicent that Viserys remained himself while he ruled, Alicent's response that Viserys lived in a world of his own construction that she and Rhaenyra never really set foot in, I mean, totally legit. And it also brings to mind his King's Landing dollhouse.
Yeah, that's what I thought of. Yep.
He lived in a world of his own construction.
Yeah.
Speaking of playing Warhammer 40K the whole time he was a king. Like, sorry, but he was. Like, as much as we love him, that's really what was happening.
Exactly. Speaking of bricks and minifigs, you know,
he was just in there
making his own. Yeah, no, exactly. But it was really cool that she had said that to kind of remind that, like, you're Viserys's kids, but I'm Viserys's wife. And that is a very different dynamic. So it's like, yes, there's things that you don't know because, you know, I was there the entire time for those things.
Mm-hmm.
God, she was so good in this episode. She really was.
I mean, not
she
that
really was great.
Alicent hasn't, that Olivia Cooke hasn't been great in previous episodes, but I
know, of course,
there was something about her that just really fucking clicked with me in this episode.
A game, just straight up A game.
Another great moment slash scene was Missaria weighing in on how she didn't think Orwell was lying about not knowing where the crown's like gold is. And Daemon kind of snipes at her like, no one asked you. And Rhaenyra just straight up announces that it's the duty of her mistress of whisperers to advise her.
Yeah.
Take that, David. Literally, that is written all over Missaria's face with her little smirk. But I'm pretty sure that's the first time Rhaenyra has given Missaria like that title, power, even beyond Missaria's being like, hey. I liked that a lot. I like, because Missaria is, regardless of what has come before or what might come in the future, I think right now Missaria is giving Rhaenyra good advice based on what she knows, which is because Missaria says it at one point, like, I might not be highborn, but I earned this, bitches. Yep. Promotion applied. Typed in that 18 character Valyrian language coupon code.
Yep.
You are now Mistress of Whispers. Good for fucking you, Missaria. Loving it. Also, Torrin Manderly, right after Rhaenyra serves the banquet au rat, which you call it like a rat a la queen. Right after Rhaenyra serves the rat a la queen, she walks up to Torrin Manderly, who's standing at the back of the hall. And like, listen, he might have dug himself a little bit of a hole there with his attitude. But honestly, yeah. I like Dan Fogler, the actor. And it's also interesting to see him in a role that's not the ones I'm used to from him, which is like him playing characters who are basically total sweethearts in the Fantastic Beasts movies. QJKR and The Walking Dead. He played a super chill, awesome guy in The Walking Dead as well. So yeah. I'm interested to see him in this role. And I know what's going to happen with that character. So I don't want to say anything else. I liked that little conversation between the two of them. And I'm interested to see Dan Fogler play this type of character. So
I think the real things that stuck out was Olivia Cooke's scenes. I felt were just amazing. Aside from that, man, like, I hate to say it, but the episode was almost kind of like a nothing burger. It really could have got summed up a little quicker. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad they did it how they did it, because we have to have a season four, so we can't go too fast here. You know, we got to get a little bit of the foreplay, you know? I don't know. I felt like it definitely had a Harrenhal feels. I felt like sometimes the pacing was kind of off a little bit, which was kind of like, but I don't know. The biggest things, obviously, was the reveal of the white baby, which was not Alice, which was great. And honestly, the feast with the rats, like, I thought that was just so well fucking done. So those are like my big takeaways with this episode, honestly.
I feel like this episode moved through a lot of different issues very quickly. So I agree with you on the pacing, but I'm not sure we have the same feelings on it. Like, did you feel maybe it was a little slow? Because I felt it almost moved through things a little too fast.
I definitely don't think it was slow. I think I just felt it, like, it was a little more discombobulated is what it was, to where it was kind of like a little bit of everything. Not that it was done badly. I'm not saying it was done badly or anything like that. But it definitely was like, okay, this. I don't know.
We said this in the summary. I specifically spoke it, but in the summary, I said, I feel like this episode was meant to set us on edge, right?
Yeah.
To be anxious. And this episode made me fucking anxious. And I think I liked this episode maybe more than you did. I think I would give this episode like an 8 out of 10 Targ eyebrows, because I feel like it was absolutely meant to sit us on edge. And that's exactly what it did for me. Some of that might be because I know more about what's coming, but it really, I think it did a good job of just, and I don't mean like putting you on the edge of your seat, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? I mean, like, it just
uneasy.
Uneasy and anxious. Like, the background music made me anxious.
There was no rest in this episode.
Right.
Sure.
No, there wasn't.
There was no rest.
What I would have loved if they could have done this as like a one shot.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been fucking amazing. I know they never would have been able to do that, but it did feel like a one shot episode, even though it wasn't, right? Like, you could tell they had cuts and stuff, but it felt like a one shot episode that was just meant to keep you just,
uncomfortable. You ever watch that movie Mother?
Yes.
That movie was the most uncomfortable movie I ever watched. There was times in this episode where I felt like that. It was like that other show. What was it called? I can't remember. It was one of the House on Haunted Hill shows that they did. And it was like the second one, Bly Manor, right? Which comes from that book, The Turning of the Screw, right? Mm-hmm. It's like madness is what it is, right? Because the screw just turns slowly and slowly makes you mad. Mm-hmm. And when I watched that show, not a lot of people had a lot to say about it, because they were like, oh, it wasn't like Haunted Hill House. I said, but when I thought about it and I thought about the title of the book, I'm like, no, it was actually perfect, because that's how I felt throughout the entire show. I felt like I was slowly going mad just watching it.
Yeah.
And that's how this episode felt. So yes, was it Harrenhal? Yes. But it was Harrenhal done correctly.
Nah, there you go.
It wasn't just Luigi's mansion. It was more of the mind as opposed to the ghost. So yes, when I think about it like that, then yes, actually I would give the episode 8 out of 10 also.
Yeah. The whole time I was sitting there just like keyed up, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. The more I think about it, and we've been talking about it, I've been kind of like, you know what though? No, it's kind of right. And when I think about that slow steps to like madness and like uncomfortableness and anxiety and stuff, I'm like, no, actually this episode was actually written extremely fucking well, actually, because they wrote it to do exactly what it did when I was watching it and just didn't realize it, you know, and put me in a state of anxiousness, and it was good. It's good.
Well, and I think that's why they had the cold opening with Damon confronting Ormond, and then the credits credits. The rest of it is basically from Rhaenyra's perspective. So they, for the first time ever in House of the Dragon history, as far as I can remember, and also like I went back and double checked, and I couldn't find another cold opening, but I also didn't like rewatch the beginning of every single episode. But also like I'm 99.9% sure that I'm correct in this, that this was the first cold opening. So they had that one scene with Daemon and Ormond that they needed to have to set up the whole Daeron thing, because that wasn't something they could just schlub off, right? We needed to know how Daeron came to King's Landing.
Yeah.
Because as far as we know, he is with Ormond, right? And Daeron.
Yeah.
Daeron.
Daeron.
We needed to know how he came to King's Landing, but them doing that cold opening and then the credits and then the rest of it being from Rhaenyra's perspective is like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I liked the episode when I saw it last night a lot. I honestly wasn't really expecting much. And I think I got more than I was expecting, which is why I would say it's like an 8 out of 10.
See, and the thing is that I didn't until now that we've been talking about it. As we've been kind of unpacking it, I've been like, wait a minute. Not that I didn't like the episode and not that I thought it was too much exposition or anything like that. I just felt a little discombobulated. I'm like, whatever. But kind of seeing, I guess I didn't really miss what its intentions were. And it was to kind of build that, you know, that uncertainty and that uneasiness.
No, yeah, I think it was supposed to be discombobulating.
Yeah. So thinking about it, I'm like, no, that's actually really good. I feel so far, you know, we're 3 episodes in right now, and I'm feeling hopeful because we only saw Harrenhal once for a little bit, and that was it. So now the question is, are we going to see King's Landing in this capacity for the next 4 episodes and then give us a big nothing burger at the end? Or like, what are they going to do? Because if they do that, dude, then me and the writers are fist fighting, because it's like, okay, you heard me say that I didn't want Harrenhal, but here you are doing your same shit again, but now you're doing it in fucking King's Landing. Like, I done told you not to do this. So here I am at your door. Now we're going to fight.
Well, I mean, on that note, what are Maester Manny's predictions for episode 4?
I feel like our predictions for episode 4 is this. I feel like we will get some kind, I'm not going to say resolution, but we're going to get some kind of whatever is happening with Aemond. It's already been an episode. We don't know what's going on. We don't know anything. They got to like pull us back in at this point. I feel like the next episode is going to be different from this one. This one was literally like a, I don't know, like a shaker up real quick. Like, okay, it started, whatever, and then now we're going to... And I really feel like we're going to figure out what's going on with Aemond. Maybe we'll get some Alice Rivers in there also. We're going to get something from that. The other prediction is Rhaenyra fucking attacks, what is the place?
Tumbleton.
And then she loses a fucking dragon. So now she has another fucking guy who's like, oh, you want to fucking kill my wife? Like, whatever. Now there's a fucking dragon opposing her ass. The Hammer. What's his name? I can't remember.
Hugh the Hammer.
Yes, Hugh the Hammer. His wife is over there in Tumbleton. Rhaenyra's going to have to fucking do something about it. His wife gets hurt or in some capacity that he says, you know what? Fuck you. You fucking hurt my wife. And he's a dragon rider now. So now he's just like, well, now I'm just going to go at arms against you. And maybe not with the other side or anything, but rebel against her. The vibe I'm getting with what's going on is that there is going to be some, let's just call it inter-rebellion. Not people who are on the outside who already oppose her, but there's going to be people on the inside who are like, dude, hold on a second. Like Corlys, right? Because you see that in him where he's like, I was here for you to the throne and this is what you're doing now. And there's going to be some of those things, because even with her entire like, oh, passing out food and like all this stuff to like, look, I know Rhaenyra's heart. I know she was doing it for good. But in the sense of like optics, that's just very politician and very fake to me. Where it's like, oh, look at how great you are. That people are going to start questioning that fucking shit at some point. I feel like
I felt like Rhaenyra's heart was in what she was doing for the small folk. I don't doubt that in any way, but we already had Torrhen Manderly being like, hey, don't forget it was your blockade that made them starve in the first place. And it's like, oh yeah, but
exactly. Also,
boats and trains
on the boats.
Oh my God. If you're listening to this and you have not listened to our first 2 seasons of Hot Do yes. Takes, you are missing out on boats and trains.
Boats and trains, baby. The hype train coming into port.
Riding the boat.
Exactly. That's why it's coming into port.
All right. Well, as we close out the episode, we just want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us for Hot Tea Takes. Manny and I will be back next week to cover season 3, episode 4, for the most current news and updates about this series. Make sure to follow at A Geek Saga on Blue Sky Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and or YouTube. And also please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. At $5 a month and up, you'll get access to our live streams Mondays at 7 p.m. Then they also air as video recordings for $3 up a month patrons Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And then patrons also get early access to our edited audio only podcast episodes, which usually come out the first half of Wednesday. It honestly depends on my work schedule, but lately they've been coming out first half of Wednesday. So fingers crossed.